I'm Aaron Syme, host of the Scaling Tech Podcast, and coming to you live today from the offices of Lightspeed in Alexandria, Virginia. Here with my friend and special guest, Sanjeev Augustine. Thanks for hosting me today, Sanjeev.
So glad you could make it here, Aaron. It's great to see you again. As you were talking about, this is, I guess, one of your rare in-person
interviews. That's right, exactly. Yeah, rare opportunity to get to do this in person, but I always enjoy it when I can, and it's been a few years since I've seen you in person, too. So great to have this opportunity. For those of you not familiar with Sanjeev, in addition to being a past guest on the Scaling Tech Podcast, Sanjeev Augustine is the founder and CEO of Lightspeed, a world-leading agile training and consulting company, and an executive consultant and trusted advisor on business agility. He was a co-founder of the Agile Alliance's Executive Forum and the Agile Leadership Network. He's author of the books Managing Agile Projects, Scaling Agile, and From PMO to VMO. And for those of you watching us live, you're welcome to ask a question in the comments, and we'll be sure to address it. So it's great to speak with you again today, Sanjeev, and we've got an interesting topic to discuss today around the intersection of generative AI and agile methodologies. So let's start with the big question. Is Gen AI going to replace the Scrum Master role?
So first of all, let's sort of unpack that a little bit, right?
Sure.
So let's talk about what an agile team is, what kind of role the Scrum Master plays on that, and then where Gen AI has been leading in the last few months, if not the last year or two. And then we can sort of maybe answer that question in more detail. So if we think about a typical Scrum team. So Scrum, of course, has been around for at least two decades. And Jeff Sutherland and Ken Schwaber, when they established the first Scrum guide, they said, well, our Scrum team is about seven plus or minus two people. So somewhere between five or nine was the initial guidance. And then they said the team has to be cross-functional. Mm-hmm. We have a role for a product owner. We have a role for this person called a Scrum Master. And then we have a role for what's now being called the development team, right? And the role of the Scrum Master was originally envisioned as someone who's a change agent who can drive lasting transformational change in an organization, take Scrum and be the tip of the spear of Scrum, if you will, work on one side with the product owner, which is a great role, first formally established business role within Agile methods, and then a liaison between the team itself and to the larger organization itself. So we're talking about somebody who is meant to be a change agent, somebody who's meant to drive transformation, and then do some of the tactical things, as in run the ceremonies, as Scrum meetings are called, events, if you will. So daily stand-up meetings or sprint planning or sprint retrospectives or sprint demos. These are meant to be the technical things. So if we were to map back to that original definition, which I believe Scrum Masters should do, then Gen AI can be at best an augmentation type of tool and not a replacement, if you will. Mm-hmm. If indeed we say, well, if you look at the de facto playing out of how that role has rolled out in industry, it's turned out, I think, to be more sort of a tactical, administrative type of role. So then it becomes, well, if these administrative tasks that I'm performing on a daily basis can be performed better by a generative AI tool, then those aspects will likely be replaced. In fact, there are tools, and we might probably get into some of these. Even Atlassian has a new tool that they've rolled out. It's called Rovo. It's their Gen AI tool. They're embedding a lot of this intelligence into Jira and Confluence. So there are administrative parts of a Scrum Master's job or mm-hmm. Scrum Master's role, if you will, that will very likely be replaced. So.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And a key word that you used a few times there was administrative tasks, right? And I think that that's a key thing about Gen AI in general. When we talk about, is it going to create jobs, destroy jobs, transform jobs, whatever the case may be, I think the areas that it's likely to have the biggest impact on, right, are the administrative areas, the things that maybe don't take as much of creative human input to it, right? And so in general with AI, I fall on the side of it's about augmentation more than replacement, for sure. So short answer, then perhaps is our next Scrum Master is not going to be Gen AI, yeah. but our next Scrum Master should be very fluent in Gen AI absolutely. And be able to use it, right?
Absolutely. And be able to use it to replace some of the more repetitive, mundane mm-hmm. tasks that she'll use doing, and also use it as a tool to amplify the core essential values and practices and techniques of Scrum, which is ultimately about human collaboration. So can we now use, can we minimize some of the repetitive mundane tasks using a Gen AI tool? And can we then now use this to amplify the connections between human beings?
Nice. So I love that. That's fits very well in the Agile Manifesto, right? let's use this new technology to amplify those connections yeah. between them. So how are Agile teams using Gen AI today? And, you know, maybe we can go a little bit like role by role and talk about where it'll have an impact.
Yeah, I think a good place to start is with that definition that I mentioned about the Scrum team. We have a role for a product owner or Scrum Master and the development team. And that's our core Scrum team, if you will. But one of the things that we've been big proponents of is to expand the definition of a team. Because if you're indeed mapping or matching our work and aligning our work to value streams, we want to make sure that our Agile teams are now operating end to end. So mm-hmm. not just on the Scrum teams, but shifting left, if you will, to our business partners, product owners, and maybe product managers and our business customers, shifting right downstream to DevOps, yeah. operations folks and deployment folks. So if you're saying our team now becomes a little bit of a team of teams, if you will, mm-hmm. then we can talk about how Gen AI can support that operation. Now, if you start with the core team, if you take the role of a product owner, very powerful. I think there's a lot of promise there. The role of the product owner is critical, especially in Scrum, definitely in other Agile methods, if you choose to embed it into methods like XP or Kanban. Mm-hmm. And just having the ability to put a backlog into a Jira or in some other tool and then put that into some Gen AI tool and perform any sort of mechanics in terms of prioritization. But for the product owner, I see Gen AI as an essential tool.
Yeah,
product owners need to get very smart on Gen AI tools, and they need to do it very soon, because not only can it help with starting with a product vision, but mapping that product vision down into epics, features, and stories. And then at the tactical level, there are some administrative tasks that can be done for a product owner as well, which is maybe generating acceptance criteria, creating user stories, creating epics, and just aligning and mapping all of those things together. But that's on the tactical side. I do also think that Gen AI can be used much more powerfully on the product discovery side.
Okay.
Can product owners now understand, connect to customers, if you're going end-to-end back to our customers, understand their needs and applying a sort of empathy? You know, we talk yeah. about human beings having this empathy for customers, but it's interesting that there's a study that I saw that they found that in the medical field,
yeah.
Gen AI tools are being shown to have more empathy than doctors. or being perceived by actual patients.
Right.
So hopefully that's not true for our product owners. but at the very least, our Gen AI tools can now drive some sort of understanding of empathy of customers' problems.
Yeah.
And then driving not just out of the problems, but driving the solutions out of that,
right?
Discovering what makes sense for our customers and accelerating that product market fit.
Yeah.
So I think on the business side, that's where Gen AI tools can be a really great augmentation or augmented tool for a product owner mm-hmm. to understand customers and iterate very quickly on product market fit. Now for the Scrum Masters, tactically amazing stuff, right? Record meeting notes, be a part sort of a person Friday, man Friday, woman Friday, person Friday, if you will, and an assistant. Literally, a Gen AI tool can become an assistant to a Scrum Master and help that person tactically keep track of all the meetings that are going on, all of the Scrum ceremonies, tactically create any sort of charts. So there's a lot of power to the tactical side of the Scrum Master's job that Gen AI can do. And then on the technical side, you use a tool like GitHub Copilot,
yep.
and that can assist with code generation, testing, automation, code quality, what have you.
Yeah. Yeah. You've covered a lot of ground there already. and I want to come back to kind of some of those different roles and talk in a little bit more depth about them and definitely, but certainly, you know, is there an aspect of it where you think it has the largest impact that that Gen AI will most, you know, which role in a core Scrum team does it most revolutionize, perhaps?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to sort of box it into one particular tool, but I think you know, I've always sort of liked to for all of us to be able to understand agile methods in the larger organizational context.
Yeah,
and then fully understand what any of these agile frameworks can bring us, whether it's a team-based agile method like Scrum or XP or Kanban, or a scaled agile method like Scaled Agile, Scrum at Scale, Next, Less, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so if you look at agile methods as a powerful tool, a powerful tool set that we can take into our change management and that we can employ in our quest for business and customer value, then we can say, what is something that or what are some of the things that with which Gen AI can assist in the larger context of delivering value to our customers using agile methods, but also augmenting and amplifying agile methods. And I find that the early promise, and maybe some of it has sort of failed along the way, the early promise of agile methods was about creating high performance teams and then working closely with customers to deliver value.
Yep.
Now, at the core of a high performance team is a very strong commitment to being able to operate independently, mm-hmm. but also being able to operate in alignment. Mm-hmm. And I find that today we're in 2020, actually almost in 2025. I was going to say just about in 2025. So we're about, you know, 4 years out of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. And I find that in this virtual, hybrid, remote kind of world post-pandemic, our personal relationships have frayed.
Yeah.
And our understandings have, an alignment has gotten worse. And whether that's understanding and alignment within a team or understanding and alignment between teams and their customers, there's a larger framework that I think that we all need to be able to understand and align with each other better. Mm-hmm. And so with Gen AI, I think there's, you know, there back in my first book, my first book was Managing Agile Projects, and I had studied this field called the language action theory. Okay. And in language action theory, there's material and guidelines from Varela and Matsuyama, about conversations and how important conversations can be. And agile teams, the promise of agile teams was that we can take and formalize something that they call conversations for action. Mm-hmm. And that was all about a customer or somebody making a request, somebody saying, here's my understanding of the request, which would be an acceptance criteria. I make a promise for what I'm going to do. I go off, I get it done. I come back and say, do you accept what I've done? And I sign off and say, yes, you've accepted it. And that circle of the conversation for action, somebody asks for some particular type of action. We clearly specify the conditions of satisfaction for that action.
Yeah.
So a fulfiller goes off and does what needs to be done, comes back and you accept. That efficiency of that cycle, I think, has frayed and has gotten worse. And so agile teams, I think, have run into issues where they're making promises that they can't fulfill, or people are asking them to do things that are not clearly specified, and therefore they can't fulfill it.
Right.
And this being able to go through this conversation for action has been suffering.
Yeah.
So I think the larger context of agile methods and generative AI, if you pull those together, it's like that entire cycle of understanding a customer's needs very clearly, capturing that in a very unambiguous, clear format, going off and delivering what that customer needs in a, you know, according to their conditions of satisfaction, coming back and getting formal acceptance and doing that over and over again.
Yeah.
To me, that's what builds the trust that what agile teams are supposed to be building and how they're supposed to be delivering. And that's where the larger context where we can apply that at each stage for every single role.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And conversations for action is a great phrase. I love that. And it's a good reminder too that, you know, in agile methods, we want to focus on communication and collaboration, right? So any tool, be it a Scrum board, you know, a virtual Scrum board or a Gen AI, we don't want it to distract or detract from the conversations and the collaboration. And so our guidepost, our North Star with the use of Gen AI is that if this helps us to do the administrative tasks more efficiently, right, then we can have those customer feedback loops shorter, right? If it takes us less time to kind of write some epics, break them down into stories, and that allows us to have faster feedback, that's a great thing. Mm-hmm. If we say took Gen AI and just said, write me a bunch of user stories and now hand that to some developers and call it done, that's a bad use of a tool, right?
Absolutely. It's an over-reliance and maybe even a misuse of how we should be using Gen AI.
Yeah. But I do like when you were talking about the impact on product owners earlier, I had in my simple mind only really thought about it as, you know, Gen AI can help a product owner to write user stories and break down epics and things like that. But you brought up a point I should have thought of about how it can also help us with the customer discovery process. Mm-hmm. And I've seen this in other contexts too, about, you know, thinking about your customer segments and helping you to think through who are your target users for an application and what do they care about. But obviously it shouldn't be a replacement for those conversations with users, but kind of the way I understand it can help support it and maybe improve the first round of those conversations. So you do a little like role playing with the AI, but then talk to users. Is that kind of how you would recommend a product owner do it?
Yeah, absolutely. And there again, there has to be sort of a clear linkage between the product operating model, as you know, Jeff Patton and Marty Kagan call it, and agile methods, because Scrum is about delivery, but not so much about discovery, right? So that discipline of product development, product discovery, which again leans on lean startup, part of the pun over here, and lean startup of course has that build, measure, learn cycle. So that's what we're talking about, not necessarily agile delivery within a sprint is, or Scrum's great about implementing that plan, do, check, act cycle within a fixed time box, but that's on the delivery side. But the parallel discovery, not right from the ideation phase, where we're perhaps looking at a business model generation, what Steve Blank and Eric Ries would call, you know, basically the steps to the epiphany, if you will, coming up with an idea, zoning in, figuring out what ideas make sense, and then developing that and moving that forward. But once we have that business model sussed out, and once we have some sort of product backlog, how can we rapidly iterate on that product backlog? And the iteration is not on the delivery side, but it's on the discovery side, making sure that we're validating customer needs, every epic, every feature, every user story maps back to what the customer needs. And we're checking back with them even as their needs change, right? Because I think we talked about how quickly we can adapt. And that, to me, that's the fundamental definition of business agility, is how quickly can we change on a dime for a dime? How quickly can we pivot or change direction as things change? And so even as we're delivering, or our Scrum team might be, or our execution team might be focused on delivery, our product owner has to lead discovery, connecting with customers and continuously and rapidly iterate on what the customer absolutely needs, right from the business model to an evolving backlog.
Yeah, excellent. So that's the kind of product discovery half of Gen AI helping a product owner. And then let's talk for a moment about the other side of how can Gen AI help a product owner as well as the Scrum Master and the team as a whole to write good user stories, right? I mean, one of the great things about the sort of contemporary implementations of Gen AI is how they have that memory, right? You can train essentially a publicly available general purpose model like ChatGPT to understand how you like to write user stories, for instance, right? And to ask it to remind you of things like, you know, the testing criteria, acceptance criteria, et cetera, right? So just over the course of working with it, it will sort of learn how you want to do it, which is great. But that's still a pretty general purpose model. I could imagine too that, if you had a model that was more specifically trained on some of these methods too, it could also help kind of enforce things that the user may not think to ask it for. So yeah, just talk a little bit about that aspect.
Yeah, I always love to sort of pull in references to other people doing cool stuff. So I mentioned that some somebody talked about, and I took a look at Atlassian with their Rovo tool.
Yeah.
And of course, that's in initial stages, and I'm sure it'll get better as it goes along. But one of the groups of folks that we've been talking to is a company called ResumeX, and I think some of them are on this podcast as well. And they have a great interpretation. It's a startup that works with something called smart contracts.
Okay. Yeah.
And to your question about what can Gen AI do to improve the product owner's delivery side, a smart contract can clearly specify and articulate and enforce and govern that conversation for action. It's like,
yeah,
here's what I as a product owner would like and what me and I need. Here's how I can specify it in terms of acceptance criteria. And if we can put this in a tool, augmented and aided by Gen AI, then we can track the delivery of the product to those specifications, to the acceptance criteria, make sure that it's been accepted, and then we have an unambiguous, more easily governed conversation for action, and that's on the delivery side.
Right. Amazing. Yeah. So in the Agile Manifesto, reminds us to favor individuals and interactions over processes and tools, but undoubtedly Gen AI is going to affect tooling also, right? And so, yeah, that's a really interesting example. Do you have other sort of predictions you would make around how agile tooling might change and help us with this?
Well, I think we have to get used to the idea that there is and already has been an evolution from the simplistic chatbot, ChatGPT, GPT 4.0, Claude, Gemini, what have you, to agents, right? Mm-hmm. And if we understand that in our agile workflow or just in our ways of working, that very quickly, if you don't already have this in many avant-garde companies, very quickly, at least over the next few months, perhaps definitely the next few years, we have to make place for, we say individual, a non-human individual.
Yeah,
potentially, right?
Really expanding the definition of Scrum team now, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So how are we going to interact with a non-human AI assistant or a non-human AI agent, if you will?
Yeah.
And how best can we integrate now those agent or agents into our overall ways of working,
right,
so that we can achieve what we're trying to do? Right. We're trying to have a close connection with the customer. We're trying to have a very rapid iteration in terms of the discovery loop, a rapid iteration in terms of the delivery loop. And we want to make sure that this is all human focused. Mm-hmm. So I think we have to make sure that we're inside the AI tent looking out and not outside the AI tent and looking in.
Right.
So that we can actually drive the evolution of these technologies and make understand. If I'm going to make a prediction, I think the prediction is that we will have AI agents that will be integrated into our overall workflow. And then we need to start thinking about that yesterday, if not December the 10th of 2024.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating to consider, because like you mentioned earlier in terms of how Gen AI will affect the Scrum Master role, that, the first couple of, and, maybe most obvious ways that will affect the role are things that how Gen AI will affect any meeting tool, right? It will help us with recording the meeting and notes and drawing summaries, action items from that, right? But going beyond that, if there's an agent in the team that is assisting that Scrum Master, it's assisting it with things like, remembering that, oh, Sanjeev made this commitment in the last stand-up, make sure to follow up with
or assisting product owner,
right?
Or assisting.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And assisting them with those hands-on tasks and integrating things in, maybe even from other agents that are more on like the technical side, right? So kind of building on your idea, I could imagine that, now we might talk about like integrating alerts from a DevOps system into, say, our Slack chat. Mm-hmm. This would be like a more sophisticated version of that it's, it's a technical agent sort of monitoring that production system, giving us feedback into things that maybe need to go into the next sprint or additional acceptance criteria or testing criteria to use, right? So, it's a lot of fascinating stuff we could imagine there. Again, all very much in that augmentation phase. This is, it's interesting to me in part to think about this, because I think for me, at least, when I've thought about Gen AI and Teams, I tend to think about it from the developer's perspective first, right? That this is going to help us write code faster,
right,
things like that. But it really does touch each role in the team, right? It's going to change how DevOps people do their work. It's going to improve the way the developers do their work. You know, I imagine if you have like an AI agent integrated into the stories and the acceptance criteria itself, then when the developer sort of takes on that story, pulls that story to work on, maybe that AI agent has already written a lot of the unit testing code you would need for it, right? Based on the acceptance criteria. So, yeah, pretty wild. Any other thoughts on sort of specific roles and how it affects within the team? And then I'd like to hear a little more of your thoughts on, because you've mentioned a couple of like scaling agile methods. You know, that's another area that I hadn't thought much about, of how is Gen AI going to help coordinate across teams?
Yeah, I think not just by role, because we talked about the product owner, the Scrum Master, then developers and testers and the automation DevOps folks. I do think that on agile teams, we will need to figure out how to integrate machine learning operations, ML ops, use DevOps techniques to incorporate LLMs, subject them to configuration control and monitoring. And so that's another aspect. But I think the oversight of all of this stuff, and you know, we have this this organizational construct that we call a value management office, a VMO, but making sure that everything is functioning and everything is subject to tracking and control. Because one of the key aspects is that we have to be careful not to cede too much control to this new kid on the block, if you will,
right?
And sort of undermine ourselves as human beings in the process.
Right.
So there is a whole aspect of responsible AI or ethical AI. And we need to make sure that generative AI techniques, at least, and maybe even some of the machine learning aspects of AI are brought in to make sure that there are checkpoints and oversight and governance of all of these AI tools.
A human in the loop, always.
Human in the loop. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Human in the loop, the recording, the traceability, if you will, if something goes wrong, and then be clear about accountability.
Yeah. No, I agree. And that's why I like a lot of, and I think a lot of the things that you've discussed are things where those agents are advising us,
right?
And making recommendations, but we choose when or how to implement those recommendations. And I think that's an important part of human in the loop for this. But yeah, when we think of sort of across teams too, I think about how it this could be helpful to us in terms of, you know, one of the most complex things I believe about scaling agile is handling those dependencies and identifying, recognizing the dependencies between teams, right? So if we have a model that's trained in that, then perhaps if it's looking at the sort of epics or stories, you know, across those teams, it's helping to us to think about some additional dependencies, right? And maybe recommending coordination.
And always looking at a risk. So performing the whole function of risk management.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. You know, that brings up another kind of role that is, I don't want to say necessarily neglected in IT traditionally, but sometimes it's seen as an obstacle of things like your security officer who comes in late in the project lifecycle in a bad example, not in the ideal way this should be done, but sort of comes in late in the lifecycle and says, hey, you can't do all of this. You know, if AI can help us to do that more efficiently and help the security officer to identify things more proactively, then hopefully we catch that, like any other sort of testing issue earlier in the cycle.
Yeah, one of the major sets of responsibilities that we lay out as part of our for our Agile Value Management Office, or VMO, is this focus on what we call adaptive governance. And we have a neat little acronym for people to remember. It's CARLA, C-A-R-L-A. Compliance, audit, risk, legal, and architecture.
Okay.
And generally on agile teams, we don't necessarily think about any one of these stakeholders that much. But with a responsible implementation of just risk management, of delivery, of and of course AI as well, we need to make sure that these stakeholders are brought in early and brought in often. Compliance folks, risk folks, legal, architecture, audit. If we don't, then we're not operating end to end, and that's not a responsible implementation of what we need to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Would you say anything else that you would think of that is a big gap in the way teams are not considering the use of Gen AI? Anything else that you would advise they're on the lookout for?
Yeah. So are you a science fiction buff by any chance?
I am. I hate to say that because then you're going to call me out on some specific fact. And,
I'm sort of, you know, in the middle on that. I love science fiction, but I'm not crazy in terms of
everything. I love reading it. I'm not great at retaining it.
But reading it and watching the movies, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I'll just sort of throw in two examples of pretty well-known movies. You've seen this movie Ex Machina, right?
Yeah.
And another movie, which is a little old, well, I guess, yeah, it is a little older, Demolition Man with Sylvester Stallone. Let's sort of take the example of what happens in those movies, right? Because somebody once said that science fiction is sort of a predictor of our future.
Sure.
Most often, I mean, not everything that we see in science fiction comes out about exactly the way it's played out. An ethical use of AI, if you take Ex Machina, is like, how did that machine become, how was it able to gain the trust of human beings and then break free of the boundaries and go, go crazy and take control?
Yeah.
And so certainly that's, pretty far-fetched. We're pretty far from AGI, if you will, from now, but now, sitting again in here and at the beginning of 2025, but there are aspects of AI technologies, even as we use them today, that can have tremendous benefit and tremendous damage. It can inflict tremendous damage. Sure. So let's take a couple of them, right? So I've already run into leaders in organizations that are saying, well, I can go out and procure XYZ AI tool, and I can get rid of half of my workforce, my developers, because now AI is going to do my coding for me.
Yeah.
Now, I've heard that, over my long career over here, I've heard that several times. First, it was case tools and this. And
right.
And it's now AI will do my coding too. Yes, AI will do some coding for us.
Yeah.
The question is, how will we use it? And will we use it responsibly? And rather than looking at cutting the bottom line, can we use AI to increase and grow the top line?
Yeah.
So I think the responsible use of AI is to make sure that we are always subjugating AI for in service of humanity, not the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a temptation to very, sort of get pulled along by greed, if you will, and say, oh, I'm just going to cut my expenses. I'm not going to do the harder work of figuring out how I can deliver more value, grow my top line, get more revenue, and use AI as a tool to grow that. And of course, help me manage my expenses, but not use AI as a tool to replace humans.
Yeah. Right?
That's the Ex Machina scenario. The Demolition Man scenario is kind of similar, right? So you remember that, it's Sylvester Stallone and I forget the actress over there, but they've forgotten how to do stuff.
Yeah.
So I think AI has the potential to make us lazy. So, and to the point that we won't be using some muscle or the other, right?
Right.
So whether it's our brain or some collaboration or some organizational muscle, we sort of delegate and divest that to AI, and then we become lazy and feeble as a consequence of doing that. So these are things that we need to look out for, the ethical use of AI, not making sure that it's subjugated in the set of technologies subjugated the human in the system. Mm-hmm. And we always make sure that the humans have primacy of agency over AI.
Mm-hmm.
And as such, there's the whole data angle, right? So data privacy, data, the use and misuse of data. And this actually sort of dictates how we can use. There are organizations that we work with that are very highly regulated, and they cannot and will not touch AI because of the data aspects, right? The potential to extract data and make it available and make it and turn it loose in the world and lose all of that data privacy.
Yeah.
So the data privacy question is a big one. So in parts of our organizations or parts of our business where data privacy is not that big of a deal, we can use AI openly and transparently.
Mm-hmm.
But there, when there's a data, the data privacy aspects, we have to be very careful not to sort of push the line and start using AI tools too prematurely.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. Yeah. And, this gets to another question I wanted to ask you too, because I think that, you talk about predictions of the use of AI, meaning we don't need developers, yeah. right? And I've also heard that prediction for several different reasons over the course of my career. And I think even in the agile industry, I think we've been a little guilty of over-promising.
We don't need those picking project managers.
Right, exactly.
That was the old agile band.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, yeah, exactly. You know, there was a time where we said, we don't need testing. We don't need project managers or you know, your developer is going to be 10 times as productive, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can always, as we know from Lean, mm-hmm. you can always over-optimize yeah. part of a process. But then if you still stick that highly optimized block within an inefficient bureaucratic system,
yeah.
it doesn't matter how efficient that little block was in yeah. the system, right? You've got to look at things at a system level. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of grains of salt that should yeah. be consumed with some of the predictions around AI and its impact on development. What's your thought on that? And what's kind of a realistic expectation perhaps for the efficiency gains that teams might expect from this?
Yeah, we have to be super careful, right? I think it varies. So if you take, and I forget what the number is in terms of developers, for example, programmers, mm-hmm. I think there's at least a 10x difference between the productivity of a really good or a good programmer versus a mediocre programmer.
Right.
And apparently it's even more, right? So we don't know what their actual number is. But I think before we can talk about efficiency, I think we need to talk about productivity.
Okay.
Right. And so to me, productivity is a gestalt of the productivity of individuals on the team, and then the sum, right, and the overall productivity of the team itself. Mm-hmm. So if you're now saying, well, we have AI as a virtual assistant or a virtual chatbot or a virtual agent that can assist, not only assist each member of the team, but can assist the team itself, we don't even know what productivity gains we can get. It could be as high as 100 times. It could be as low, low as the same thing. If you use sort of keep the productivity at the same level of the team is. But my guess is that we can at least see a doubling of productivity.
Yeah.
And at least on our within our team over here, each one of us uses within Lightspeed. Each one of us uses generative AI as a assistant in our work, and then we also use it as I mentioned in sort of a holistic fashion. Mm-hmm. And I would say it at least doubles our productivity. Mm-hmm. Now, in terms of efficiency, there we start to look at the workflow. And if you're looking at taking the Lean perspective, you're looking at the value stream, and we start yeah. to figure out where these bottlenecks are, mm-hmm. and then we apply the theory of constraints and say, where's the biggest bottleneck? How mm-hmm. can we not sub-optimize around that, but look for the optimizing the whole?
Yeah.
I don't even know what I can, I don't want to make any specific predictions, but there's one, I think, for the Mick Kirsten book that they talk about the development being just 4%, I think 4 or 5% of the mm-hmm. overall sort of work that's done.
Right.
And if you say we're optimizing not just the 4 or 5% of the whole value stream, but also business side deployment, I think we can at least look at 5x, 5x type productivity and efficiency gains of at least 50% over there.
Yeah, yeah. So when people talk about how this is going to impact software developers, that's 4% of the problem.
That is, yeah. And we obsess about that, right?
Right.
Oh yeah,
right.
Go up and do this better and that better, but it's actually the whole.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, we need to look at things holistically. That definitely makes sense to me. And lots of opportunities here for improvement and augmentation through each role of the process. So I appreciate, Sanjeev, you helping us think that through. It's been really interesting. I want to know, as we get close to wrapping up here, how is GenAI changing the work of agile coaches and trainers and your work at Lightspeed?
Yeah. So one of the things that we've looked at in our work, always aspired to be, mm-hmm. is to be a trusted advisor. Right. So to be a trusted advisor to our customers, and from that perspective, we don't just sort of look at ourselves as coaches, if you will, mm-hmm. but as consultants. Right. So there's a dual role that we're playing. We're playing the role of being a consultant to our customers, and also then helping coach them. So when we're playing the role of consultant, we might be providing more harder messages, more critique, if you will, saying, hey, this is what's not working, or here's what you need to fix in terms of efficiency or productivity gains or the introduction of these new technologies. And then having established that baseline, then if we move sort of maybe into a coaching stance and say, okay, now let's help you do it, right? So I think our role right now, and because it goes up and down, with agile methods, because initially as consultants saying, hey, here's an agile process, we can help you figure out how to implement it, and here's a, and from a, with a consulting stance, here's all the things you need to change. And now for the past few, past several years, for a decade, it was, okay, let's help you coach through that and help you implement that. But I think we're back in consultant mode right now, because if we need to be trusted advisors, we're hopefully leading by saying we know these new technologies, we know these tools, we can help you integrate it. And it's not going to be easy. It's going to be difficult because there are all these things that to consider. There are all the impacts to consider. And I think we'll have to be more consultants now and coaches later.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Well, Sanjeev, you've certainly been a trusted advisor to me, and having had the opportunity to work with you and others at the LifeSpeed team earlier in my career, I know I learned a lot. And so I'm grateful for that and grateful for this conversation as well. Any other closing thoughts you want to share, and how can our listeners learn more about your work at LifeSpeed and get in touch with you
all? Yeah, my closing thought is we all need to understand that Gen AI or the set of technologies is a tool. It's part of our toolkit. We need to learn as much about it so that we can integrate it responsibly. And I always like to say, I think I use this phrase, I'll use it once, I'll use it again. It's better to be inside the AI tent looking out than outside the tent looking in. So please go out, learn about this stuff, integrate it, and don't be scared of it. Things change. Things are changing much more rapidly with generative AI. But let's dive into it and let's sort of take the future, if you will.
Perfect. Thanks so much for joining me, Sanjeev. Really enjoyed the conversation. Thanks for all of you who joined us for this conversation today. This will be archived on the Scaling Tech Podcast YouTube channel. To learn more about other episodes of the Scaling Tech Podcast, be sure to follow us on YouTube and the podcast platform of your choice, as well as visiting us at scalingtechpod.com. To learn more about my company's work at AgilityFeet, check us out at agilityfeet.com and lifespeed.com for Sanjeev and his team. So thanks again for joining us for this special conversation of the Scaling Tech Podcast.
Thank you. Take care.